very good Tuesday. Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature agricultural news reports, I'll bring you a look at national and regional agricultural news headlines, and I'll start with regional ag news right after this.
This segment was sponsored by Polymer Ag, makers of Anti-Stress 550, the climate stress solution. Find out more at polymerag.com.
In news today from California Rice, the application period is now underway for the Rice Leadership Development Program, which provides future leaders a comprehensive review of the industry, emphasizing personal development and communication skills. The program is for rice producers or rice industry-related professionals between the ages of 25 and 45. The deadline to complete and submit the application is September 8th. For more information, log on to calricenews.org. Also from the organization today, the California Governor's Office of Business and Economic Development has announced a further delay in applications for the California Small Agricultural Business Drought Relief Grant Program. No firm date has been given for application availability. California's 2023 almond production is forecast at 2.16 meat pounds, up 4% from May's subjective forecast and 1% higher than last year's crop at 2.57 billion meat pounds. The forecast is based on 1.38 million bearing acres. Production of the nonpareil variety is forecast at 1.10 billion meat pounds, 10% above last year's deliveries of 1 billion meat pounds. The nonpareil variety represents 42% of California's total almond production. The almond bloom began in the middle of February and peaked at the end of the month. Record-level rainfall and unprecedented stormy conditions hindered bee pollination activity in orchards across the state. Cooler-than-normal temperatures continued through early summer and delayed the maturity of the crop. Growers have been irrigating, applying pest treatments, and preparing for harvest, which is expected to begin in the next month. The average nut set per tree is 3,953. That's a decrease of 3% compared to 2022. The nonpareil average nut set of 4,004 is 1% higher than last year. The average kernel weight for all varieties sampled was 1.67 grams, up 14% from the 2022 average weight. The nonpareil average kernel weight was 1.69 grams, up 9% from the 2002 average weight, and that is a total of 98.4% of all nuts sized being sound. The volume on organic strawberries in California continues to improve, as does the demand for the fruit. The weather caused a very late start for California organic strawberries. They are in July and normally what they would see crop-wise at the beginning of April to May. It all really did not start until the end of June. That's how delayed they were on everything, according to Andy Martin of ANA Organic Farms. He adds that while there were quality issues on the front end of the crop, things are getting better and growers are starting to hit their stride in supply. Right now, supply is coming from the Salinas Watsonville area in California following the transition from Santa Maria Oxnard. ANA Organic Farm starts the year with production in Enseada, Mexico, and goes until early spring. They have a big program in Mexico that was delayed by the weather. They went longer than usual through Mother's Day, and they had a spectacular Mexican season. Then they weren't really able to transition to California because of the weather and lack of supply, according to Martin. Production should stay in Salinas Watsonville until the first frost, with the El Nino happening in 2023. There could be early and frequent rains on the crop. Then while some Mexican production starts in November to December, the organic shipper won't begin with Mexican strawberries until the start of the new year. Meanwhile, demand is starting to pick up on organic strawberries. When there weren't any strawberries at the beginning of the season, there was low-priced Mexican fruit and high-priced California fruit demand had been kind of off, according to Martin. No one wanted to bring California in until it hit a groove, so that made demand lackluster at that time. Now that Mexico is gone and California is going, it's stabilized and everybody is pretty much buying California fruit, so they've seen consistent demand in the Pacific Northwest and Western Canada. That has also helped to improve pricing, which was challenging last year. Low prices affected the number of growers staying in the organic strawberry market. There are fewer units, so pricing may be better, and they're seeing more stable pricing for growers right now. Last year, they were probably in the $9 range, and now they're in the mid-teens, which is better for growers, according to Martin. With most shoppers planning fruit purchases before entering the store, Sunkist continues to engage with shoppers where they show up. And right now that's TikTok, a platform where millennial and Gen Z consumers are spending increasing amounts of time. The Sunkist Unlimited campaign highlights the versatility and flavor of in-season varieties, tapping into viral recipes and collaborations with foodie influencers who share tips, tricks, and hacks. Consumers can easily substitute in-season Valencia oranges, also known as the summer orange, into any trending recipe, as these oranges are perfect for juicing and are available now through October. According to Circana, where citrus represents 10% of total fruit dollars sold at retail across the U.S., according to Cassie Howard, Director of Category and Consumer Insights. Through Duets and Stitches, Sunkist TikTok creates concocted dishes that share ways to bring in-season Sunkist citrus to the table, such as the lemony Senegalese-inspired cottage cheese toast, or sharing hacks including lemon ice cubes and orange sugar rims. Rounding out in-season summer citrus varietals include California Star Ruby Grapefruit. They have learned a lot about the grapefruit shopper over the years, and according to a Sunkist Commission study, new shoppers are important to the category, representing nearly a third of all grapefruit households and are predominantly millennials and Gen Zers. An interactive Sunkist Unlimited website was launched to highlight the potential of in-season citrus. The website hosts trending TikTok tutorials and incorporates a surprise generator to inspire visitors to use citrus in fun, unexpected ways. The site demonstrates the unlimited nature of citrus by expanding the website search filters for more personalized search results, such as selecting by key ingredients, dietary requirements, or prep time. Sunkist has also upgraded the Where to Buy platform so consumers can search which stores are carrying in-season summer citrus varieties. When it comes to onions, Jason Pearson with Eagle Eye Produce in Oregon said that his company is shipping onions out of California and New Mexico. He says demand has been good. They have onions coming out of New Mexico and California, and the quality has been good. They are shipping all colors and sizes and have good availability across the board with plenty of Colossal and Supers, but medium reds have been heavy in interest as they are super tight right now. They are happy the market is holding and remaining steady and anticipate shipping out of both areas until mid-August when they make the transition to the Northwest. And Rick Greener of Greener Produce in Idaho said that his team is moving onions out of California, New Mexico, and Mexican onions crossing through Texas. He said demand is excellent for small stuff. He said it is steady for jumbos and larger, and medium reds are hard to find. Has been good.
AgroPlante is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlante. Imagination, innovation, science in action.
In melons, as with many annual crops, weeds that emerge in the plant row are the most difficult and costly to remove. There are only a few registered herbicides for California melon production, and efficacy can be marginal depending on weed species and method of incorporation. As a result, mechanical cultivation followed by hand weeding are the main methods of weed management. UCCE County Director for Merced County and Vegetable Crops and Soils Farm Advisor Scott Stoddard explains this issue in detail.
The limitations of the herbicides that we have means that really, if you're a melon grower, you don't really have a lot of good herbicide options. So I started then also looking at some of these new robotic cultivators that are coming onto the market, have been tested extensively on a lot of lettuce crops and cool season crops, especially in Salinas and other areas of the world where this production goes on. And I thought, well, you know, maybe there's something there as something to use as either an alternative or in addition to the herbicide program that we have for melons. And so, kind of one thing led into the other, looking at herbicide programs and trying to come up with better timings and combinations of herbicides led into this work with the cultivation and these new robotic cultivators.
Stoddard wanted to test automated weeders in melon as he suspected they would work well and round out an integrated management program for the crop. In 2022, he conducted a trial at the UC Westside Research and Education Center evaluating finger weeders and the RoboVator automated weeder on weed control and crop safety in drip-irrigated cantaloupes. These treatments were also compared to Prefar, Sandia, and Kerbit herbicides.
First year that I tried doing this, which was actually about 3 years ago, the particular couple of locations that I chose almost happened to be completely weed free, just because the grower that I was, these were on farm trials. The grower was like, "This hardly ever happens, but I ain't complaining," is what he said. And so I didn't really get a lot of good weed control data from the first time I tried this. The machine, the cultivators, nonetheless, worked very well. There was no crop damage or any of that kind of those kind of issues. So as far as actually using these cultivators in melons, they worked well from that standpoint. So in another year, I then did this work at a research station. We happened to have not a lot of grass. Mostly it was a lot of puncture vine, which many people are quite familiar with in the valley. It's in, and all bicyclists hate is our puncture vine because it always puts holes in your tires. But that was, oddly enough, that ended up being the dominant weed where I did the project the second time around. And to sum it up, the herbicides actually ended up working much better than the cultivators in this particular situation because that happened to be the way that the cultivators work. I'm going to backtrack here a little bit on you, Taylor. And so there's my work is looking at these new one example, a RoboVator of a new like plant scene robotic cultivators. Which there are several on the market now, in which they actually have cameras on board, computers and things like that, and they actuate these mechanical knives in which to take weeds out in between the crop. This particular kind of technology is very well suited for things like transplanted crops, like broccoli, lettuce, cabbage, and also melons. Okay. In comparison to this technology, I also evaluated a finger weeder, which is a very simple and inexpensive and not technical piece of equipment that has rubberized finger weeders that reach across into the row to take weeds out. So all of this research that I'm doing is actually concentrated on weeds within the plant row, because that is where it's the challenge for growers. That's where the weeds can become a problem, because normal and regular cultivation equipment does a good job of taking weeds out in other areas, almost regardless of the crop. So it's only those weeds in the plant row that I'm concentrating on. And in this particular case, both of these systems did help in the second year where I had weeds. They did reduce the cost to the grower of in the neighborhood of about $30 to $50 per acre. That was where the reduction in hand weeding times, that's what it would calculate out to be. So both the technologies did. So you had one that was very technologically advanced, did about $35 to the acre benefit. The other one that was very simple, the finger weeders, did about $50 worth of benefit to the grower to take out these weeds. Again, the weed was puncture vine, and it has a long germination phase. And so we took out the weeds quite well initially, but then there was subsequent flushes of weeds. And this is where the herbicide, in this particular case, Sandia, actually worked very, very well, and because it prevented further flushes of the weeds. So in that particular case, the herbicide actually saved more money on hand weeding in the tune of $100 to $150 an acre. So the herbicide in this particular example was more effective. However, the cultivators did also help. And I think that it leads to, you know, the question of, well, what if it had been a different weed spectrum that I had, would the results have been the same? And so it's probably not, the results would not have been the same. But it does sort of make you think, well, let's continue. I'd like to continue this work going forward to evaluate these combinations of looking at cultivators and looking at certain particular herbicide programs for for weed management within the plant row.
Given the results and the high efficacy herbicides can still have depending on weed species, an integrated weed management program for melons is generally recommended, one that incorporates both chemical and mechanical.
If you can follow a Roundup Ready cornfield, for example, or a Roundup Ready cotton field, it has very low weed population. That's always good for a melon field because you don't really have a lot of really good herbicide options. So you want to come into a field that's relatively clean in the first place. So, and of course, these automatic robotic weeders and other things, they have their limitations too. If you're going into a field that's full of field bindweed, it's full of Johnson grass, of perennial weeds, or very, very large weeds, very heavy weed populations, these things are not going to work for you. So where they work best are in those fields where you have a good plant stand, and then you have small weeds and of a smaller weed population. So you do have to kind of think of integrating these systems all together. And it might mean even thinking about what crops you are going to plant or that you had planted the previous growing season.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
We're waking up to a new dawn in agriculture, a better way, where farmers stop working the soil and start working with it. At Huma, our carbon-rich, humate-based products improve soil health and fertility, deliver nutrients more efficiently, and reduce crop input costs. Welcome to Humic Solutions with a Human Touch. Visit huma.us to learn more.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture has published a Federal Register notice requesting public input on the draft federal strategy to advance greenhouse gas measurement and monitoring for the agriculture and forestry sectors on behalf of the Biden-Harris administration's Greenhouse Gas Monitoring and Measurement Interagency Working Group. The federal strategy was prepared by USDA, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, Department of Interior, National Aeronautics and Space Administration, and others. The draft federal strategy outlines a framework for enhancing greenhouse gas measurement, monitoring, reporting, and verification within the agriculture and forestry sectors, with a specific focus on the administration's Climate Smart Agriculture and Forestry Initiative. It also aligns with ongoing work across the federal government to quantify carbon sequestration and carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide emission outcomes associated with activities funded through the Inflation Reduction Act. On July 12th, USDA announced a $300 million investment to advance priorities set by the strategy. Notice will be available for public comment until August 11th. It's available through the Federal Register. In other news from USDA, they are making a major investment which will help in verifying the results of climate smart agricultural practices. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
The agriculture secretary says to fight climate change, the nation's farmers and forest owners need to be encouraged to adopt even more climate smart production practices.
But to do that, we have to have accurate, reliable measurements of the impact and effect of the changes and the practices that we're embracing.
And so Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack is announcing a $300 million investment to do just that. Vilsack telling reporters part of the money will go to establish a couple of networks, one for soil carbon monitoring and research, one for greenhouse gas research. But
this opportunity is more than just collecting information, more than equipping our farmers and ranchers with better tools. It also supports the work in terms of the advancing the notion of climate smart commodities.
Commodities that could bring a premium to producers if they can verify that their ag practices actually reduce greenhouse emissions or hold more carbon in the soil. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The consumer price index for all urban consumers rose 0.2% in June after increasing 0.1% in May, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. The index for food at home was unchanged over the month, while the index for food away from home rose 0.4% in June. The index for fruits and vegetables increased 0.8% in June, following a 1.3% increase in May. The cereals and bakery products index rose 0.1% over the month, while the index for meats, poultry, fish, and eggs decreased 0.4% in June. The other food at home index decreased 0.2% in June after increasing 0.4% the previous month. The index for dairy and related products fell 0.3% over the month, and the index for non-alcoholic beverages declined 0.1% in June. The food at home index rose 4.7% over the last 12 months, while the index for food away from home rose 7.7%. Total U.S. farm tractor unit sales in the U.S. turned positive for the first time in 2023, led by continued growth in large tractors and combines. The Association of Equipment Manufacturers reported gains in the U.S. market that were led by 100 horsepower two-wheel drive units, up 25.4%, closely followed by four-wheel drive units, up 21.9%. However, a change from the previous month is a small gain in the sub-40 horsepower two-wheel drive segment, up 0.2%, that took overall sales positive since they represent more than 66% of total unit sales volume for the month. U.S. combines also marked another large gain of 9.8%. At the mid-year mark, year-to-date unit sales of farm tractors are down 9.7%, despite a gain of 45.5% in the four-wheel drive segment over that same period. And combines are up 51.5%. Total farm tractor unit sales year-to-date in Canada are down 14.4%, while combines are up 81.8%. Lawmakers just introduced the Dairy Business Innovation Act of 2023, bipartisan legislation that will reauthorize and strengthen the dairy business innovation initiatives. Senators Tammy Baldwin, a Wisconsin Democrat, and Marsha Blackburn, a Tennessee Republican, introduced the bill. Baldwin created the Dairy Business Innovation Initiative through the Dairy Business Innovation Act in 2018, which passed as part of the 2018 Farm Bill. Baldwin says expanding this program will give more small and medium-sized dairy businesses the tools and opportunity to reach new markets. The initiatives provide resources to serve prospective and established businesses that produce a product made from milk and a dairy animal, including dairy farms with their own production facilities and dairy processors with cheese, ice cream, and bottling facilities. Since the program was established in 2019, initiatives have supported over $150 million in awards through regional centers across the country. Farm First Dairy Cooperative, along with other members of the Midwest Dairy Coalition, endorsed the legislation.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.